We're on the air.
It's time for Perf Bites.
What the f*** is Perf Bites?
The fourth square meal of the day.
Don't bogart the Perf Bites. Microwave ready. Add nutritional value to your brain. It's time for Perf Bites with your hosts Mark Tomlinson, James Pulley, and Howard Chorney.
Perf Bites.
Whatever.
Hey, it's time for Perf Bites. Oh, that doesn't work. There we go. Hi.
It's time for Perf Bites again, evidently.
It's time for Perf Bites twice.
I'm having Perf Bites deja vu all over again.
Hey, it's time for Perf Bites.
Hey, everyone, it's time for Perf Bites.
If you didn't know that already, absolutely. Welcome, everybody, to yet another Perf Bites Live from STPCon. Live audience.
Woohoo!
Awesome. Awesome. We're having a blast here in Framingham. Howard, you know where we are.
That's right. We're in my hometown.
We're in Howard's hometown, Framingham, Massachusetts.
It's an amazing town, Howard.
Did you know it's the largest town in the United States of America?
Framingham?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
It has the largest population. It's the largest population. Let me rewind. Framingham has town government, so it has the it's the largest population that still runs town government. So we have selectmen, not a mayor. We are not a city. We are a town government.
You're a town.
We're a town, not
okay.
The city.
So Howard, that makes you a townie?
You know it.
That doesn't make you a townie.
Seems somehow appropriate.
I know.
Yeah. Yes. So as is usual, we give a couple of shout outs right off the top of the hour. We have a roving topic that are in the show notes over here. I think we want to cover a little bit about modern web protocols, HTTP2, and sort of the cutting edge, bleeding edge of HTTP. We want to talk a bit about holiday readiness. So that means making sure your websites and or systems are ready for any holiday peak loads. Does anyone have any holiday business plans?
Any dot
Cyber Monday, Black Friday?
It's dot commerce out there?
E-commerce sites?
Yeah.
Yeah? It's real. It's real. And, of course, we'll also do an audience participation on stories about performance or really stories of any kind. We're quite open to that. And we'll be giving away a pair of shoes, as usual. We'll also be giving away stopwatches. James, would you, for the listening audience live, maybe you want to share what's happening with these funky brand-new stopwatches?
Well, for the at-home listener, we have a black stopwatch with the black and red Perf Bites logo and our signature phrase, helping IT professionals to improve performance. Not available at any price.
Not available, because we're the only ones that were crazy enough to make them. James, what do people have to do? And we're going to tweet this out at Perf Bites, or the hashtag is STPCon, so #STPCon. What do people have to do in order to obtain one of these fine performance measurement devices?
Well, Mark, you will have to share a performance story, arguably one where you learned something, probably painfully, and the best of these stories will wind up as the candidate for the shoes.
Yes, for the shoes.
So we have four opportunities to earn a watch. And one opportunity to earn a pair of shoes.
All right. So you, if one lucky person tonight will get both a stopwatch and shoes.
Yes, they are extraordinarily lucky.
We want to make sure we get the math right before we proceed. Right?
Hey, did you hear about the one about Goldilocks and the three performance testers?
No.
Wow.
Can we share that one in public?
I don't know.
This stopwatch is just right. No, I'm sorry. Exactly. All right. So with that, let's commence our usual kickoff, which is to say a topic of some sort around performance. And one of the big ones that we get a lot of interest in is modern protocols like HTTP2. Now, James, we did a show on HTTP2 before, but there's some new information we have to share, right?
We did do a show on HTTP2 with Scott Moore. And I've already heard at the conference several references to HTTP2. It's coming. It's going to improve performance. But not a really in-depth discussion on what HTTP2 is and how it improves performance.
Yeah.
So on a foundation basis, if we think of the finite resource model, CPU, disk, memory, network, what HTTP does is it improves the efficiency of the network leg of the conversation. It reduces the number of connections, and it improves the efficiency of what is being streamed over the existing connections. So there's some technical information that goes along with that. I'm going to turn it to Howard to, you know, start going through the points there. But it is this network connection, which if you've read any of Steve Souder's books, high performance websites, et cetera, he really looks to optimize that network link because it is the most expensive link for the customer experience.
Yeah. Now, before we go any further, Howard.
Yes, Mark.
Does original HTTP just suck?
Well, I don't think original HTTP sucks.
But,
I think it's fine.
But why do we need HTTP 2?
Well, I always ask that with IPv4 and IPv6. Why do we need IPv6?
So are we running out of HTTP addresses? Is that what you're
saying? So what are we going to... We're going to invent a DHHTTP?
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. But there were limitations. I mean, we built how many... Almost 20 years worth of HTTP-ness. And I believe the origins went back to Speedy, right? So Google came out with Speedy. And then they went to work with the IEEE and said, all right, Speedy is now... HTTP 2, which is bigger, better, faster, more.
Mm-hmm. So kind of one important point about... So look, I think one thing that people have been really jonesing for is multiplexing to a single connection to origin.
So you reduce the number of connections because you multiplex.
Exactly.
Now, have you ever been on one of those conference calls where you talk and somebody else can't talk, but then they talk and they can't hear you and you hear that? It's like a CB radio.
Absolutely.
So right.
Kind of
no.
like,
Stop.
Yeah.
Wait.
No, wait.
You can't see?
Yeah.
So with HTTP 2, we can talk over one another at the same time. Wouldn't that be great?
And we always do that anyways,
do that
don't we?
Anyway. Right, what James? The heck? I think that's fine.
Yes.
It's even better when we're all remote, too, because we can't, no one can see each other.
Yeah,
talk.
With a little bit of latency,
like,
we're just all over.
That's awesome. So now we could actually do that and even make the broadcast more interesting.
So yeah, so one, we're going to multiplex. What else we got?
Oh, we have header compression.
So
we can shrink things like a user agent from 24 bytes to 9 bytes for any small HTTP/1 request.
Doug Hoffman just did an interpretive dance of compression. That was good on you, sir. The kinesthetic learning power is right in the back row there.
So my favorite thing coming with HTTP 2 is really the server push technology, which is the ability of the server to interpret the page composition and then send downstream all the page components with one request. So we don't have this constant back and forth of connection, request, sending of results. But that does bring up some interesting challenges. And now we're getting into treating the web server much more like a database server. And how do we manage the page cache in essence, essentially the page query cache? Is it going to be dynamic? How are we going to handle missing components? Because let's face it, developers will miss components on the page.
Yep.
How are those handled in the page resolution cache? And how fresh must that cache be? There's all sorts of things that are going to come into play also on implementation regarding server push, how that is being managed by different vendors, and that's going to impact performance. So it's not going to be consistent for a while.
Well, are they going to use caching to mitigate the need of really having to develop the code for performance?
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah, I know it's not easy for me to say.
Well, I'm wondering if this is more compatible as an origin server for CDN, because you've got instead of having multiple chats back to origin, you could have one stream and then CDN is popular.
So that that may be a really cool use for it, right?
Yeah.
So because there are, let's talk about security too, right? There's some security advantages and
there are actually
disadvantages.
What's the one?
The big one is that payloads are now going to be encoded as binary versus clear text.
Ooh. So we compress the header, and that's a form of encoding by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you can decode it, right?
And so think about what that means for tool vendors. Everything is compressed, encoded.
Ah.
Yeah, all the challenges that tool vendors have now for handling HTTP2 connections on the decode for information that's coming back, properly encoding it going forward.
Yep.
We're going to see some generational change on the tool vendor side.
I'm wondering on the client side, I mean, you figure I got a dual core iPhone 5, right? The 5S is a dual core.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm doing extra work in the CPU, I mean, are we making better use of distributed compute power that's sitting in almost every client device now?
I think theoretically we could definitely be doing
that. Yeah. But there's also more CPU overhead coming on the server side.
Yes. We're no longer a stupid server just serving files. We actually have to manage the query.
Yeah. And assemble things. I think about 404s. Is this the end of 404s?
Well, you see, that's an excellent issue, Mark.
No more
404s. If I don't receive something that's a part of the page definition, am I going to re-inquiry the server anyway with an HTTP2 connection? And what if I have a page which is a mixture of sites? Some are HTTP 1.1, some are HTTP2. Do I downgrade to the least compatible conversation element? So everyone has to be HTTP.
I would think you'd have to downgrade to the least common denominator.
Especially for how many sites are going to have to run in dual mode? They'll support both HTTP and HTTP2.
So I'm going to pick on Andy here. What's the popularity of third-party components on a web page? Are they very popular?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Here we go. I think they are very popular, of course, right? You've been sitting in my, at least for a while, in my
I sat in on one of your classes, yeah. and you pointed out, hey, look what happens when you load the page without the third-party components versus the third-party components. One, it adds significant page weight, and it may change the shape of how many domains you have to connect to, maybe from two or three internal to 20 or 30 external.
Well, the thing is, I think the biggest challenge is that it moves the risk from you to third-party component providers that you don't – and risk meaning in performance, right?
Sure.
Because now you're no longer in control of the performance of your perceived web performance.
Well, that's always the thing we're trying to resolve anyways, right? Because, you know, we're always trying to see how do we mitigate that third-party call-out that we all have to deal with. Yeah. And every site has to deal with them. In sub-sites, it's even more ridiculous than others.
No love.
So if I have one third-party component that's at HTTP 1.1, do I downgrade every other conversation to every other third party in order to maintain compatibility? Or are the clients going to have to evolve so we manage different types of versions of HTTP on each connection? That's going to require more CPU locally. That's going to move the focus of where performance is if you have a bottleneck in your computing power, particularly if you have a browser with 32 add-ins from different vendors. Yeah, that's slowing you down.
How many
anyway?
People have 8 toolbars in there?
Yeah.
Oh, everyone. Exactly. You know, this kind of brings me back to something when we did that recording with Scott Moore, and I started to turn into the ROI broken record, right?
You are an ROI broken record.
And the reason I was the ROI broken record is because of all these questions we're coming up with. I mean, I think it's going to be pretty expensive for people to go from HTTP to HTTP2 now.
So this is the question. How would you guys know that it's worth it? Like, and anyone want to volunteer an idea as to how you would make the decision to move to this new technology? Is anyone freaked out about it? Paul's freaked out about it. Step right up, sir. There's a microphone here for you. Paul Bruce, thank you, by the way, Paul, on behalf of Smart Bear for the Dalwhinnie. A single malt scotch that we'll be imbibing later on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, thank you. Talk to us. What do you think about this whole HTTP2 thing?
HTTP2. It's a great idea. It's fantastic. It came from essentially Speedy. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's got to be a good idea if it's from Google. I mean, they know what they're doing, right?
Isn't that right? They're inherently good about it.
Well, at least it's not evil.
Here's what excites me about it. For one thing, I was a developer I am a developer for now 15 years.
You'll always be a developer.
My first line of code in Netscape 2, which is not as far back. Okay. On the other hand, that's a long time in the web world. We got kids that don't even know what SOAP is anymore, as opposed to REST. So, in my opinion, the value add, aside from, you know, all the performance great things, is that some of those technologies can shift the responsibility of deciding at an application architecture level, where are you going to spend your time as a developer? You're going to spend it like, you know, minifying stuff? You're going to spend it like spreading crap out? Or are you going to like let the framework take care of that for you and let multiple things like, for instance, multiplexing happen automatically? And so we were talking about like, well, what do? Do you downgrade the client as well? And the thing is, the great thing about HTTP 2.0, it runs on servers. that are also probably completely capable and recently had run HTTP 1.1.
Yeah.
So you can very easily downgrade what's going on the client for some dumber client. Like, I won't name names.
Yeah, that's fine.
But that's what excites me. What scares me about it, though, is as a tool vendor, yeah, of course we have to keep up. You know what I mean? And that's our job. That's our job to keep up and make sure that you guys have stuff you need.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I don't know how much of that benefit. That's what scares me. We give all these great tools to folks, and then
the
Google.
The ROI question, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then you know, somebody comes out with a great idea, it gets adopted by IEEE, and there's literally years before people move on to that technology, and that's what scares me.
Unless, to Don Haynes, ROI is ROI. In this situation, is it worth to invest in the change, and what do we get out of it is different than a cost-benefit analysis of testing generally.
Yeah. I heard an actual cost-benefit analysis.
Don't start. She will... get on the camera there.
Cost-benefit analysis. Yeah, no. I don't know about
Have
ROI.
Have scotch with Dawn okay? later. She'll
but when it was almost 2 years ago, I went to the Boston High Web Performance Group.
Yeah.
And that's just fantastic from Wayfair. They host that thing. And I was listening to Jonathan Klein, who was one of the senior performance engineers at Etsy for a while. And he was talking about, you know, speedy and HTTP 2.0.
Yeah.
And I did see, you know, like he said, well, we turned it on and we got like, I'm just quoting a number here, like something like, it was not reasonably significant. It was like 15-20%.
Really? So not like blow your socks off.
It was not like
crazy.
80% difference. Boom. And there it goes. Yeah. So, again,
I would think this depends on the app, like the architecture of the app you're working with. Some may benefit, like, from the multiplexing part. Obviously, the security part, you might not see until somebody comes along and says, thank you for being more compliant, which they never do. It's just there's a breach and you're fired. That's kind of how it works out, right?
Mark, I think there's really a kind of an interesting advantage you can get out of this. And I think some people are looking at advantage or disadvantage. I would actually call this an advantage.
Yeah.
You start to take the load off your network and put it on your server, right? If you start taking the load off your network,
CPU,
right?
Yeah.
But look, CPU is cheap, memory is cheap, server is cheap.
Network infrastructure is harder to change, especially in a highly distributed.
Yeah, but what this is going to do is it's going to shape the curve, particularly on those that are in, say, Amazon or Microsoft Cloud Azure, where you're being charged for every resource access, CPU, disk, memory, network. So now you're shaping your curve. You may be minimizing the network component.
Do we have a cloud vendor conspiracy starting up here?
Is anyone here work for a cloud vendor? No. So we should all buy stock in because they're going to make tons of money off this.
Oh, I think they will.
Oh, you need a larger instance. anyway, we have another testimonial here. Doug Hoffman, welcome to Perf Bytes. Your second time. We were with you in Phoenix. You were in the audience with us.
Yeah, well, I listen once in a while.
Right on.
I'm a little confused.
Yes.
If the new protocol requires moving back to the 1.1 if the lowest common denominator, right, does that mean that I have to maintain two versions of what I'm doing?
Well, I think it would.
Or
do you just blindly trust the framework to put itself in gear?
Yeah, of course. There are no bugs in software.
No one can see this on the radio, but how many here, show of hands, would love to trust the framework blindly?
Just trust blindly?
Yeah, of course.
But we're all testers, Howard. We know better. But to your point, Doug,
we're all professional cynics in that
respect. Yeah, it's like this is not just something you're going to flip the switch on. And I wonder if there's a test result out there that says if you run in deprecated mode, I'm thinking of an analogy in, say, IIS running in classic mode, right? So the pipelining is different between different versions of a web server, right? There's actually a performance degradation because they sort of box you in this old library or some. But if you want to go really fast, you move to the new thing. So would there be a danger potentially running your app in HTTP2 mode, even though it's paying some, I don't know.
Well, you know, one thing that just scared the daylights out of me.
What?
Thinking about this.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, so that was problematic right off the bat. But
yes, you were going to say something else?
No, I'm done. I want to finish my thing. Oh, really, I do.
Yeah, the thing that concerns me is that, you know, if somebody, God forbid, would include my website as something they display.
Yes.
It'll be 1-1 for the next 5 years.
Yes.
Which or longer, because we're going to be lazier about it.
Well, in any case, that means that anyone who is creating new versions of their site,
yes,
have to have a second version, 1-1, of whatever it is they're doing.
Or not. Or it serves through the same thing and it figures that, yeah, we just figure, I don't know.
So, yeah. Think about this from a load testing perspective.
I'm going to channel Doug Henning at this point. It's magic.
It's magic.
Think about this from a tools and a load testing perspective.
Yeah.
All right. You know what scares me the most?
What?
What happens if I get mixed transactions? How am I going to really figure out a pure transaction response time for each of my... If everything's being mixed up, now it's all convoluted.
If you're on the top of the client-side stack, do you really care? But, I mean, if you're doing a more low-level load test with a lower-level tool, yeah, all of a sudden I wrote all my scripts in HTTP 1.1 compliance, but actually the flow is different, the calls are different, you know. And this, to your point, Paul, anyone building a tool to support these for load testing or functional testing, your tool being able to support this, do you sit high enough on the stack to be able to adapt? You know, we're put it through the HTTP stack. No change to our scripts at all. We can all hope that would be that nice.
Right,
but I think there could be actual flow changes to app traffic.
And I'm worried about the reporting piece of it too, right? If I have a transaction and I have multi protocols in the transaction, do I have to do I have to triple my transaction markers in my script so I can actually understand what's going on?
See, now you're preaching to the tool vendors to say, don't make me do this. So just say it to Paul. Paul, please don't make us ever do this.
Well, Paul,
Andy, don't make us do this.
I'm saying this to Paul and Andy, and I'm going to go back to my guys and say the same thing.
Yes.
Yep.
Tim Western here, Vertax, is in the house. Tim, welcome to Perf Bites.
Good evening.
You're one of the few people that could say long-time listener, first-time caller.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. What do you think?
So east of the Rockies, hello.
East of the Rockies, Tim.
Did I understand that explanation correctly, that it would perhaps gracefully degrade to HTTP 1.1 for 2.0?
Did we use the word graceful? What's graceful?
The question. You know, how do we handle this mixed environment, and will it degrade gracefully? We don't know. There are a lot of unknowns related to server implementations. What is the actual resource cost if I run in a mixed mode where I support a 1.1 and a 2.0 client set? Do I force an upgrade to 2.0?
Right.
In which case, I'm going to orphan some sort of browser architecture, say Microsoft, whatever, shipping on the desktop and whatever version of Windows. You know, as someone who comes from a database background, I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm now turning the web server into a database server, and I'm supporting different connection types and different connection efficiencies, and each one of those has a resource cost associated with it. And I don't know that you can degrade gracefully. You have to optimize for one or the other. It's hard to optimize for both.
So this gets scary. So all of you commerce vendors out there who are doing your cometomysite.com and buy stuff, could you imagine if you didn't support Microsoft browsers anymore because of this? Do you think your company would implement that?
Could be. Tim has another comment.
Well, I was going to add, I've spent 9 years as a government contractor, and I'm sitting here thinking, if it degrades to HTTP 1.1 and we're saying that HTTP 2 is 2.0 and we're advertising it, are we actually leaving ourselves more vulnerable for the types of hacks that the government had with the OPM hack?
There you go. It could be baked in the expectation, Tim, is that there are security enhancements with HTTP 2, so you can be more secure. So there may be, from a security standpoint, an incentive to say, get off of HTTP 1 and move to this new thing. Who cares about performance? That's nice, speedy. But really, we want more, in the government space anyway, you might see people wanting to do that.
Now, I'll blow your mind and imagine all those outdated government systems that all have to be bought up to compliance. And how much money we're going to have to spend to replace
all
those
things. Thinking of an article that I read recently about the Navy paying Microsoft for extended life on Windows XP on embedded
systems. Windows
XP
was a perfectly good operating system, don't you guys think?
Yeah,
it was.
Fine, right?
It was fine. It was one of Microsoft's better OSs, I think.
Yeah, but you have this aging issue, and you know, at some point, am I going to require a browser that doesn't run on that operating system?
Again, this is HTTP 2, the new IPv6.
There you go. All right, guys, so we're going to take a quick break and take a little public service announcement. You guys ready for that?
We're sure. Ready, Mark.
You're ready?
Yeah.
Let me see here. Let's go with this one.
You know them. You see them hit the end of an iteration and they just plain ran out of time for performance testing. You hear them convincing the VP of development to just fire all the testers. You see some other kids aren't testing at all. And you see the cool kids are now testing in production. It can be tough under all that peer pressure just because you want to be cool, too. But being cool isn't as important as it seems. PerfBytes encourages you to keep your own commitment to quality steadfast and not give in to those trendy, cool hipsters who don't know how to test. Stand your ground against emergency promotions and too fast releases directly into production without any testing whatsoever. Know that PerfBytes supports you because friends don't let friends deploy without testing.
That's a beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you very much. I remember playing that the first time we edited it up, and I think James, you were driving, and just I can't stop laughing. I'm gonna drive off the road or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very fun. And we do have requests, by the way. All of the public service announcements are available publicly on our SoundCloud page. You can go to SoundCloud, look for Perf Bytes, and there we are. Are we kind of pretty much done with HTTP2?
Just looking to see if we had any more highlights.
Yeah, I think we've got it.
I think the horse is keeled over.
Let's talk a little bit about holiday readiness. How many of you are getting ready for the holidays?
Woohoo!
Personally, you're going to go shopping. We're all going to go shopping online, right? Does anyone never go shopping online? Just you're really never. You just could just all done with it. Just
who here pops a big bag of popcorn and just watches the news for website meltdowns?
There you go. Now we know Tim. Paul's there. Exactly right.
As long as they're none of my clients.
So we're going to rapid fire give you some advice, and then we do want to keep opening the mic. And thank you to those of you that have come up. And we're specifically now, if you're going to tell us a story about performance, it doesn't necessarily have to be the holidays, but this is where we'll give away some stopwatches. You guys good with that?
Yes, excellent.
Time is ticking. Let's have our first contestant.
Let's have our first contestant. Paul, are you going to tell a performance story, or you had something else to say?
No, mine was lame last time.
Oh, no, he was lame. That's right. We gave away one stopwatch already to Dawn Haynes. Congratulations, Dawn.
Dawn, how did you put it? This was the one time where the tool was more lame than the application.
Something like that.
Yes, and that won a stopwatch.
That was a decent story. So, if you think about, as we go through some of these, if you spark and think of a performance story to share in order to obtain a stopwatch, please just make your way right up to the table here and we'll do it. So the first one I'm going to throw out before we jump in with Deb is the 100 by 100 rule. So as usual, on almost every STP con, Doug, you'll remember in Phoenix, we talked about the 100 by 100 rule, which is what, James?
If you have a cart which is more than 100 days old or has more than 100 items in the cart, you need to do something with the cart.
Preferably delete it before Black Friday.
Yes, yes. So there are different variations we've looked at. There's the 50 by 50 rule. If you have someone that has 50 items in their cart, perhaps give it to your inside sales organization to convert them.
Let's see Amazon do that.
Well, what happens in many cases is you get someone who's window shopping and they go and they put an item in the cart, they see how much it is, they can put another item. And over time, that actually consumes quite a bit of disk space for storage on your system. And if they never purge what they've placed in the cart, you'll have a situation where you might have something in the cart that's 8-9 years old.
It's expired. The product may not even exist.
Yes. In fact, Greg Kudos, the godfather of Windows Update, he went to a camera vendor recently where he had been 3 years ago, and there was a lens still in his shopping cart. Yeah. So, and the lens was no longer available for sale,
yeah, or even be manufactured. They don't even make it anymore because it was toxic or something.
Yeah. So we'll just keep that in mind. You need to get rid of kind of the flotsam and the jetsam in your system in order to make your system more efficient. And part of that is converting large sales, such as an entire team's worth of sportswear,
yeah,
or purging items that are just clogging up your system. And also, if you have a default cart and a perpetual cart, you may have millions of empty shopping carts just being stored in your database.
Do you guys want to hear this story? We've said it before. It's beautiful, and I think it's what did I call it? Occupy website, back in the movement. Occupy
yeah,
website.
Yeah,
Occupy
yeah. Movement. So
does this
so
happen to be a website we all
like
worked on together?
Sort of like a passive resistance form, right? So
is this about a site we all worked on together?
No. It is. It's from performance tester Vamsi, who was there, and no one was listening to him. He's that little performance testing guy in the room, and he's kind of soft-spoken. He was a very soft-spoken guy,
yep,
but brilliant engineer, and he was doing all the investigation to look at these objects in the cart, and for some reason they kept, you know, in the middle of load test, all of a sudden, boom, they'd get this stop the world. Everything would come to a halt, and they're like, what's happening? This garbage collection nightmare, these terrible things are happening. And basically, Vamsi went through all of his work, and he's like, guys, there's a cart here with 150,000 items in it.
And it happened because they had a monitoring script built by not very mature testers that did not return it back to the same initial condition at the end of the script. And the script was, add an item to the cart and time it. Add an item to the cart and time it. Every couple of minutes.
Couple of minutes for a year.
And so... And one of the reasons why Mark and I got called is this site was tipping over about once every 15 minutes as the cart was purged from memory.
Now, you can imagine you rematerialize the cart. It's got to go into the database and get all the individual items, and those become objects within the app server. And in the app server, all those little objects get created at the same time. Well, then you leave your session, and those objects age out, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, my session's gone. I need to garbage collect your 150,000 objects. And that
and this
stops
means
the world.
Stop!
So, again, the 100-100 rule isn't just sort of a good practice for business reasons or for whatever. It's technically, it will bring your site to its knees. It'll stop everything, which if you have a competitor that owns a cart and they wait until Cyber Monday and your competitor just keeps putting items in a cart, this is a perfectly legitimate hack. It's not even a hack. You support the default cart. They just wake up at 10 a.m. on Cyber Monday and open the cart. And in 15 minutes, your site is out, and all the traffic
And you know what? If you're in a commodity sales situation where you just took down your competitor's site for just a few minutes,
that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money that's going to flow over to you potentially.
There you go.
To recover.
So avoid the 100-by-100 rule has serious infrastructure dangers if you don't go down that. Now, we'll open the mic to Deb here to share a story. This is our first performance story. Deb, welcome to Perf Bites.
Thank you. I wasn't going to come, but I was forced to because I wanted to get some Converse.
Right on. It's good. It's a wonderful motivation.
I really don't have a performance story, I just started this company in May, and we have a freeze starting in October in 2 weeks because of our Christmas rush.
Yep.
I asked in our development meeting, I said, do you guys performance test? And they said, oh, yeah, we probably should renew our license and run our scripts. And I said to them.
Are they doing this after the freeze date?
Yes.
Or before?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Perfect. That's great timing, right?
Yeah, that's the last 100 yards where we can't make any changes anyway.
And I asked them, I said, when was the last time somebody looked at the scripts to see if they added any new functionality? We have no idea what the scripts say.
Do they even know what tool they were using?
Okay.
It's a third-party tool that's in the cloud. I don't know what tool it is.
That's fine.
I found this out on Thursday, and I was leaving on Friday. I said, I'm not worrying about it until I come back.
Do they have a test lab, or they just run it in production?
They have a test lab that is.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with
running
it in production.
No, they have a development test lab.
Okay.
That's
a different story.
That's a different story.
Oh, so they have like three. They have three VMs sitting on
one machine.
One machine.
Yeah,
that's their test lab.
Yeah. So, it's getting changed. They didn't have QA to begin with, so I'm coming in.
You're enlightening them.
I'm enlightening them.
Beautiful. I'm awfully tempted to hand you 4 stopwatches right now, but I'm not allowed to do that.
Because the next 45 days of your life are just going to be hell.
So. Wait, we can all help. Take a stopwatch, and on 3, everyone hit the carriage return. 1, 2, 3.
So that's my story.
It's the pizza part. What are you doing now from this learning? Like you've got them bought in to get together, run a test, investigate the scripts. What else are you doing?
Since I'm technically not allowed to do anything regarding performance testing yet, since I'm too new according to them, at least I got them to say I get my own test environment.
Okay.
I got that far. Woo-hoo!
That's a win.
That's a win.
That's a one step. Very good. Very good. Especially an isolated environment where you can measure performance when there's no other noise. That's a huge step.
Right. That's performance testing, they're so new that they never had testers before.
Okay. So if you end up in an argument and you feel like no one's got your back, just call us and we'll just out them on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
First names only. Give us the details and then we'll stick Tim on them. Tim will just hammer them in Twitter and that'll be done. But we got your back. No worries. Yes. Stopwatch for Deb?
Yes, we can't use Dan's real name, so we'll call him Bob.
Good luck. Use it. Yes, absolutely. Excellent. So that's really good. Very good. All right. So what's another tip we have for holiday readiness here? Howard?
We have plenty of tips. So what do you think? Here's one of my favorites. Run a spike test.
What's a spike test?
What's a spike test?
Ask James. I don't
know. I know what a spike test is. I was just being awkward. James, what's a spike test?
See, that's what I do. I never answer
You're familiar with railroads?
Yeah, I am.
And this promontory point?
Yeah.
Yeah, they took a spike and they drove it in the ground.
That is not the right answer, James.
Isn't that when you spike somebody's drink and see how long it takes them to get drunk?
Okay, I'll explain for you what a spike test is, since my colleagues are just joking around. Yes, exactly. Spike test, how many of you just run a stress test, gradually increase a stress test, right? Just keep going until something blows up, right? Or you do a load test, which is sort of ramp up and just steady state for a good long while, maybe half an hour, an hour, 2 hours, something, right? A spike test is exactly what you'd think. Bring up a little bit and then go straight up. Hold it there for a little bit at like 10x for like some period of time and then bring it back down so that it releases and you can see it. So it really looks like a top hat. We should call it a top hat test.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't you think?
Absolutely.
The spike test. The other thing you can do is
we just call it the Lincoln test.
The Lincoln test, without the hair, without the facial hair.
Yeah.
Lincoln was a hipster. That's pretty cool.
Was he really?
He was. He'd be totally in.
But he was Republican.
Under the hat, he had a man bun.
But he's Republican. But he's Republican. How can he be a hipster?
No, trust me. They're everywhere, Howard. Exactly.
Hey,
but the idea being...
Hey, look, I wasn't saying anything wrong or bad. I was just questioning if he was Republican. How could he be a hipster?
You would question those things, but that's a totally different podcast. So the idea is for e-commerce, if let's say you're going to do a promotion, if you're going to be putting out a new product and there's a specific date or specific time when that you're going to – the product is available. Come to the website. Sometimes they put it out on Twitter. Sometimes you put it out in social media or an email blast or something like that. Call up your marketing department. Next Thursday at 4 p.m., the product is available. Wow.
And then we're going to have 50,000 people show up on our site in 5 minutes.
Yeah. So if you're doing normal load testing, just sort of run some load, or you're doing even continuous load testing, we do short, small load tests that are kind of steady state. Consider for the holidays, let's do a special round, maybe a week's worth of game day, what I call game day scenarios, DevOps game days, right? So spike up, spike the test. You can do an interval spike test where you do multiple promotions one after the other to see if the site can go up and down like that. I'll give one piece of advice where we've talked about spike tests before, but I've seen recently, and this was really interesting, where the site itself had actually some garbage collection pauses and had a couple other latency issues where they kept coming back to me and saying, oh, we get all these spikes. It spikes up to 130 transactions per second on one server.
And what was it?
But the arrival rate is steady. So the traffic comes in at a steady rate, but they keep saying, we see these spikes going up, right? And the truth is, you can actually cause the spikes by having your app in this stuttering kind of way, like a Stop the World. So it stops for a second, queues up a bunch of requests, and then catches up really fast as soon as the app server releases and spikes.
And because the traffic's coming in at a steady level.
Steady level, it's just going to back up. Yep. So the spikes, you may be causing the spikes on yourself. So you want to basically do your diagnosis to make sure that you're looking at GC suspension is a good cause. You can also see it in the database as well. If you're looking at other deadlocking or locking behaviors, mm-hmm. right, where you're blocking on stuff. So that's a good one. That's what I'm saying. Do a spike test. Who has another story about performance? It doesn't have to be from your current position. You could We have another opportunity here. Welcome. I can't see your name tag, sir. Rich, welcome to Perf Bites.
Welcome,
thank you, everyone.
Rich.
Welcome, Rich, to Perf Bites. Here.
Thank you.
Rich, what is your performance story?
Well, when I first started performance testing, I was on a phone with the vendor, and they were showing me the software. So they wanted to show me how you could add or increase or decrease users.
Okay.
So we set up a quick script. Went to Google, looked for load testing, and they had six users. We'd drop it down to two users, bring it back up to six. It was only a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
In that couple of minutes, I hit the Google site about 100,000 times.
Did you get a call from Google's lawyer?
Yeah. No. No, they just shut us down, the whole company.
Yeah. They block you, right?
There was this woman in information security. She never smiled. She came over to my desk smiling.
Why? Because they blocked. You got blocked from Google?
Yeah. Saying everybody, including the president, can't go to Google right now.
Your entire subnet had been blocked by
everyone.
The Googleites.
Yes.
So congratulations to Richard. You spammed Google.
Yeah.
You single-handedly bringing down. Now, did you do this again? Did you put think time in the script and behave yourself? Or
that was the only time.
That was just the demo.
Information security came over smiling.
So the tool really. So you're actually using dynamic ramping on the tool?
Yeah.
Or they were demoing it.
Yeah.
Demoing dynamic ramping.
The demo script didn't have any think time in it.
Yeah.
So
actually, the vendor was demoing it for me inside.
Inside your firewall.
Without any think time.
So
that's evil. Isn't that evil?
Yes.
I'm reminded of a story of a 5-year-old child who was given a machine gun for Christmas.
That's terrible.
And no adult supervision, and then was just allowed to go and have their way with the neighbor's automobiles. And it seems remarkably similar to this story regarding Google.
No more cars.
Yeah. If you actually look in all the vendors' licenses, they will actually say you can only test against sites you own, manage, or control.
Yeah.
It's referred to as the Smith and Wesson Clause because they do not want to be sued as delivering to you an inherently dangerous device that then you use to go out and hold up a grocery store.
Or something. Just get a cloud instance going, do a little spoofing, and
go through
spam
a Tor
away.
Browser. Be fine. All right, so we have to stopwatch for Rich.
Yes.
Yes. Good learning. There you go. Thank you, sir. Awesome. Very good. All right, Howard. Another tip from the bucket here.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Let's go out and trim the session just like we would on our Christmas tree.
That was they're not a
wow.
That's
come on.
So that was nothing like the Dr. Seuss book I remember as a child for Trim Your Session. But
you read the Dr. Seuss version?
I read the Dr. Seuss version.
That session, have like three red things. Look, one session, two session, three session, blue session.
All right, we've lost Howard. He's just gone off the deep end.
You can't keep feeding.
So yes, James, you wrote this one. Trim the session. What do you mean, trim the session?
Performance is a function of how you allocate resources and how long you hold resources on the server. So if I hold the session too long on the server,
like 20 minutes,
Yeah. 30 minutes, these are resources I cannot allocate to new users on the site. They are held, they're involatile.
Yeah.
I have to wait for them to be returned to the pool. And it's very common for marketing to say, you shall hold the user session for 30 minutes.
Because they might buy. They might,
they might come
they
back.
They might come back and buy.
And yet they look at their Omniture reports and say, oh, well, the average amount of time the user is on the site is 10 minutes, and the average time from page to page is no more than 90 seconds. But we're going to hold my cart session for 30 minutes instead of, say, 180 seconds. So
trim the session.
Trim the session. Be very aggressive. Be objective. Look at your logs. See the actual amount of time taken from cart instantiation to the last time a user is on the site. Odds are your cart session will be 2 to 3 times longer than it needs to be, and that directly leads to too many users on the site, too many sessions stacking up, and the server turning over.
Now, keep in mind that this is very good for end-user sites. Necessarily in an API or a web service context, you may not have those same
correct. It'll be more stateless,
more transactional, stateless. Yeah. So if it's a full rich user site that you're serving, you'll wanna think about this. All right, that was good. We're gonna do another story. We have two more stopwatches, so we got to keep going. We got Paul's got one. Paul Gersoff. It's a different one. He's got a different. So he tried last night.
I was encouraged to anonymize this one. So.
Oh really?
Yes.
So the names have been changed to protect the guilty.
Yes, to protect
excellent.
The guilty.
All right, Paul.
Or welcome, to protect the business decision.
Very good.
So I was affiliated with a previous organization, and we put forth an estimate for a performance lab, and it was a relatively large sum of money.
Like Deb's building a performance lab.
Yes. Exactly. So equipment and staff and everything. And the business guys looked and went, well, on Black Friday when we are down, we don't lose that much money. We lose less than that.
Okay, so they made an arbitrary decision that performance was not worth what the risk was.
I won't say it was arbitrary. It was based on sort of the previous results do not guarantee future performance.
True.
But based on the data points they had, that investment was not worth the loss that they were going to incur.
But did they take into account the customers who aren't going to come back anymore because they had such a miserable experience and they're just doomed
Howard,
to repeat?
No.
They did. They actually took that into account in some sort of percentage way and said, we're good. We're not going to do that.
So how do you adapt to that? Were you still there? Wouldn't you talk them into something, building half a lab, something better than nothing?
Did the user community grow and therefore their loss was greater than expected?
That's kind of where I'm going.
I do not know because some of those conversations happened without me.
Okay.
I was just the automation guy.
Did that become an RGE?
How are you going to win a stopwatch if you say things like, I don't know?
I mean, it's a learning opportunity.
Mark.
But the real truth is they did a business analysis and said,
not worth it.
Not worth it to us now.
Yeah.
They did that same analysis every year.
What did they do? Use the magic eight ball or something and shake it?
They looked at previous years and said, this is about what we are out on Black Friday.
Yeah.
And therefore, we are willing to incur this business risk.
So is that a resume-generating event for you?
I believe that would be resume-generating.
So despite the nebulous nature of the discussion, I reserve the right to award a watch on haircut alone.
I'm getting a social promotion.
You're getting a social promotion.
I'll give a shout-out as well. Deb, you're in this same situation. It's not always one and done. Sometimes when you're working at a company like you were at this place, you brought the argument, you made the case, and it didn't go that time. But soon enough, it's like that ketchup bottle theory. It's the third person that finally came with the same investment case that said, all right, yeah, finally we will make the investment. So
for what it's worth,
make that investment, the argument anyway.
For what it's worth, that company now has a performance lab.
There.
Yay.
There you go. Now we'll give them a stopwatch for that.
Thank you.
All right, so a stopwatch for Paul. And we can do another tip.
I think we should
do another tip. We're actually on time. We're way over time. But are we having fun? Want to keep going?
Yeah.
All right, you guys are in. There's plenty of refreshments, plenty of water, and there is some wine over here. So one more tip, Howard.
To me, this is a tip for Well, it should be a tip for everyone, but if your processes are kind of mature, this would be a really good thing to build on the good work you've been doing. And that's know your horizontal and vertical scalability trends. So when you're out there doing your testing for holiday readiness, really start to understand. It's all about understanding what your site's doing. Be that site architect. Understand what's going on in all the other parts of your site. Do some what-if testing, do some spike testing, whatever. Then look to see what's happening with your site when you're doing these different types of tests and pumping this different type of traffic through. You see your trends, then you develop a plan of action with the whole team that's going to be sitting around in their war room on Black Friday or Cyber Monday. So you know if you start to see one of these trends starting to occur, you'll know how to go out and attack it right away before it topples you over.
It's like the plan of attack for the SWAT team.
Exactly.
Okay, we're seeing this. More servers. Stat. More memory. Stat. That's how I would say it, just like that.
And it's also worthwhile.
More pizza. Stat.
More caffeine. Stat.
Call the CDN vendor. Stat.
Yeah. Well, that's a good tip as well. There are some optimizations that take lots of forethought and planning. It's hard to throw a CDN vendor on, you know, at the last minute because they're very busy as well.
Well, have your CDN vendor
but that was good. This
as
is the idea
part of your SWAT team.
Yeah, so your performance test results are predictive of what's going to happen in the future. So your prediction should be, wow, we're going to be out of CPU. How do we throw more CPU at the problem on Cyber Monday when there's no, it's last minute emergency, let's throw some equipment at it. I think that would be really good.
And I do want to say one thing, too.
What are you going to say?
If you test in production when you're doing this, you can learn how to get it even better, faster.
Howard is one of the cool kids who tests in production. Very good. All right. We have one more stopwatch to give away. And then who has a story? One more story. Come on, somebody. Tim's already talked on the mic. It's got to be a real story, though. You know, are we going to enjoy it? Tim, come on. What do you think? All right. Let's go. It's a performance story from the trenches with Veritex.
This is actually a story tied into a takeaway from Andreas' talk, and it's a question to the testers. One of them was a client-server app.
Yeah.
And the most interesting one was the web app. They were logging all their logs to a database, same database for all the rest of the content was. Sounds fine, right? Until the login page goes to check to see if the log is full and starts throwing errors because it can't put a log that said it actually connected because you have it still on debug mode.
And then logs that error to the log that's full and then checks again to see that
and
the log
is full? And
so
nobody can get into the website that you're trying to get out next week to demo to a customer.
Right. And as that ensues, then that creates a paradox and the entire universe collapses in on itself.
And all of development comes to a halt.
Development comes to a halt.
Is this like taking a vacuum and running over its own power cord?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it keeps running for some reason.
The log file of death.
It's Sam Neill on Event Horizon with the Lawrence Fishburne. Remember that?
Yeah,
that was
yeah,
a crazy
yeah.
horror movie. Yeah, that was a terrible, crazy movie. Yeah,
maybe anyway, it's...
So this was your Event Horizon logging issue.
Yeah, first one. The Beautiful. Second one was the log actually saved the day. Because if you know where the log is, I had a client-server application I mentioned where it was sending a lot of data back home to the server, and I don't know what the server did with it.
Yeah.
I was testing the client, and it kept crashing on upload. I couldn't figure it out, and I was trying to time it with a stopwatch. I thought it was a performance issue. And sure enough, a developer mentioned, oh, there's logs. Well, where are they? Go look, and sure enough, there's the error message going in the log. You overloaded the Java garbage collector.
On a major upload.
On a major upload, yeah.
Two-week object.
In which case, it fails, and then the user can't use any of the data, and they have to start
all over again. I'm sorry. Your object is just too big for us.
Yes, your object is just too big
your
for
object
us.
Object is too. So, know it's 2 a.m. Do you know where your logs are?
Yes, it's 2 a.m. Do you know where your logs are?
Right.
Yes.
And the other one is, it's great to know where your logs are.
It's great to know where your logs are because it might just save the day.
Might just save their logs can save the day. Logs can save the day.
Here I come.
I'm singing with Howard now. This is
logs.
All right, so those are good. So a great tip for the holidays as well. A lot of people don't check the log space before they go. Stopwatch for Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Tim, come on.
And get your Perfite stopwatch.
And before we go to the next segment, which includes the host that scares the willies out of me.
Well, hang on. We're at 54 minutes in the broadcast, so
yeah.
We normally do the incredibly fun News of the Damned segment that James is talking about. Everyone loves it.
Everyone wants some news of the Damned. They all want it.
If you guys are staying with us, we are going to go. We're this marathon Perf Bites.
We're going to throw a little.
I was going to invite Martha to provide her opinion on who would win the shoes.
She's thinking about it right now as she's tallying it up. That'll come as we come back from the news. Are you guys ready for News of the Damned?
Yeah.
Are you ready? All right, hang on.
Welcome and greetings, Perf Bites listeners, or as the guys that work in my branch office in Italy taught me to say, saluti e benvenuti on the coro in the Volta Scattori e Perf Bites. Not bad. Kind of love those little romance languages. It's your old pal Satan here again, giving a thumbs up to Mark, James, and Howard for doing their best to help everyone understand the pure evil of a failing website infrastructure. You guys are the yin to my yang, and that's saying a lot considering I'm not really into the whole Chinese metaphysical thing. But Lao Tzu, that was one of the smartest dudes I ever met. Seriously. Anyway, without further delay, it's time for the News of the Damned.
Can you dig it?
There he is.
Let Larry alone. Leave Larry alone.
Tortured. Skewered from the inside out. I really should familiarize myself.
That is your users talking.
Yes. Now, for those of you that may have been unfamiliar with News of the Damned as we put this together, the whole idea is that Satan does his best to punish the world, but nothing compares to some of us in the IT department who are definitely punishing innocent people around the world, such as our first story, James.
Well, it's a tradition of sorts for the Software Test Professionals Conference to look at the latest disaster story from airline fare sales. It seems like for the last four shows going,
four News of the Dams, they all have an airline.
We've had a airline failure, and in this case, it is an Icelandic-based airline. So it is from last week, Wow Air.
Wow.
Wow Air. Wow Air event was they were selling $99 fares.
How do you say wow in Icelandic?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow Air. Yeah. They were selling $99 fares.
Did you see the picture of their planes? Are really pretty. They're like pink and very cool looking.
I figured they were prop planes with like pontoons on them or something.
Airline, right? And going to Iceland is like the rage, right? Everyone in the UK that's got money to go to Iceland, they go to Iceland.
Well, now
they
it's
go to
cheap.
The spas of Reykjavik.
Oh, yeah, and you do the mineral spa and the healing thing, and then someone comes and rubs your, Yeah. So that's why you want a $99 fare.
Exactly, and it was cheap fares from North America to Iceland, and then cheap fares from Iceland to the European continent. So you had people coming from both ends of the universe trying to book fares on WOW Airlines.
Yes.
And that then resulted in a predictable event, which is this concept of spike load.
It is a spike load.
Created by the marketing department. And the website went over. I did take the opportunity to email the marketing department for a comment. I received nothing back.
Yeah. Is that surprising? Maybe you didn't say it in the right language.
Yeah. Only once or twice have we had somebody actually come and talk to us. But the News of the Damned or the Perf Bite Award, this year we're going to call them Perfies.
The Perfies.
We're going to give out Perfies. Was Tiger Air. Into Indonesia and Australia, Tiger Air?
Wasn't Tiger Air a repeat offender?
No, they weren't. They were the another airline went down, and then Tiger Air said, we can do this. And so they matched all the fares. Their website didn't crash at all. So we gave an award last year to the CTO of Tiger Air because it's like, oh, yeah, your other airlines, you guys can't handle the load. Watch this. Boom. And they...
Yep.
Free tickets. I think they match the other.
Free tickets. It's like a dollar ticket.
It's just a
or
dollar
something.
Fare. If your website crashed, come on, we'll fly you there. And boom, their website stayed up. We were like, good. That's a good show. Look at that.
Woo. What did they do? Give you a parachute and push you out of the plane when you were near your destination?
It's not.
No, no. That was old Mercury Interactive Consulting. That was close optional as long as you had your briefcase with you.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, so sorry, yet another airline. I think we have a whole category of awards going to airline promotion.
I think that industry, along with the British concert ticketing sales, industry, those two are going to be vying for an industry award.
Well, speaking of ticket concert industry, James.
Yeah, yes, we had two. One in San Diego.
San Diego.
Garth Brooks. Anyone here a Garth Brooks fan?
Anyone remember Garth Brooks?
Well, he's coming back. I
remember him. You remember him?
Okay, yeah? So we have one That's Garth Brooks fan.
Chris Gaines.
Chris Gaines. Chris Gaines.
James is saying he's Garth Brooks, yeah.
I think so. No. So anyway, his two fans got together and they crashed a website in San Diego.
Really sad show. They're running on a laptop.
Oh, Polly, you're going to get sued for that one.
So very sorry. Ticket sales, as you can imagine, we talk about spike tests. Somebody says, Garth Brooks tickets going on sale. And the thing that's always common about these things, it has a specific date and time when you can go buy your ticket, or it's a limited, like there's only 400 tickets, so you have to rush.
Or in this case, it was an incredibly small venue for the small number of fans.
Yeah, it was a house party somewhere with three people.
If it's a good band, a cool band, everyone's going to go for it at once
anyway. This could revive Garth Brooks' career. Hey, I'm crashing websites, dude.
I made it to News of the Damned.
Yeah, this could be a big deal for him. What's the other ticket
site? The other one was in Seoul, Korea, a band called EXO.
Yeah.
They had tickets that were going on sale for an October 10th show at Seoul's Go Check Sky Dome.
Yep.
And the fans crashed the website. They couldn't even access the site for more than an hour tickets went on sale. And the problem with this particular one is it had a cascading failure. So the site would go down due to load. It would recover. Users would find out it's back up. They would come rushing back again. And so this cycle continued for a period of time until users were frustrated and left or tickets were exhausted.
Yeah.
And that type of cascade event is actually very common where you have limited supply, limited time, and a larger demand.
Yeah.
Situation.
And remember, we talked about spike tests. You can also do interval spike tests over and over again. That would, if you see the website go down, doesn't recover, hammer it again, doesn't recover, then you can figure out exactly what resources are not coming back online, what processes you needed to restart instead of just, you know, actually letting it try and recover. Paul has a question.
Yeah.
You could, yes, right up here, sir. Somebody brought pizza? Do you order pizza? Oh, there's pizza.
Oh,
check that out. Okay, sorry.
So nice. And
yes, you went, Paul. You're competing
with pizza. And Don,
between me and pizza, pizza wins.
You already won you already won a stopwatch.
I have an airline story for you.
Oh, okay.
I love airline stories.
Well, I'll get done quick. So, the it's come up a number of times how, like, you know, there's a misunderstanding or not comprehension at a business level about performance testing, testing in general. But my question really is, like, if it's so valuable to the business, why is there not a comprehension at the business level? Yeah, marketing. Yeah, the people. Paul, you had the story about
Building a lab, yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't enough time. Oh, it wasn't worth the cost. I'm thinking to myself, consulting cost must have been worth it at some point just to bring in...
Well, Paul, I mean, there are people that use a computer that don't understand why it doesn't turn on.
Yes, and they're running the world, aren't
they? And they work in marketing.
Oh, I see.
This is the classical problem of we may not know we have an issue until we have the right expertise. I can think of one e-commerce vendor that was allocating a shopping cart too early. Which it was very common. They were giving out a default cart. People were arriving on the site. Everybody would receive a cart because it's easy for developers to do. They don't have to make any decisions. And simply by moving the cart from that one location to when someone actually looked at it or placed an item in the cart resulted in $12 million of additional revenue over the course of a year. So, but they did not see a problem because marketing said, I have to have the little cart icon whenever anyone shows up with a number on it.
Yep.
And that number was not converting at the same rate as taking the cart away and having a faster, more responsive site.
So, yeah, I think we just miss it because are a lot of assumptions that, oh, you tech guys, you're going to get this right. Paul, you're a developer. You're going to get this right.
Go do
right?
these things.
And
but
so,
don't people.
But there's a lot of complexity behind that. I also think when I look at APM tools, they don't necessarily give you the right insight to say, wow, we should do something differently here. So you can't take action until you see something to take action on or you learn about something to take action on.
I have some silly question to ask.
Yes.
And the question is it not incumbent upon the performance engineer to be the pioneer and to enlighten, to share? I mean, that's really the – let me put it this way. I've worked in several organizations. I've worked in – consulted with big companies, and I go pal up with the marketing guys so I can figure out what they're trying to do.
You need to bring in some single malt scotch.
Exactly.
Or some homebrew.
Right? You know, it's incumbent upon us. It depends on the maturity of the engineer who's working in the organization. If we sit there and whine that the marketing folks are listening to us, then we're not talking loud enough.
Howard, that was a perf rant.
There you go.
That was a little semi.